Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Durrell Jones spent 32 years of a life sentence in Massachusetts prisons for the 1985 murder of Guillermo Rodriguez. From the time he was convicted at age 18, Jones has always maintained he did not commit the crime. In 2017, his conviction was overturned after a judge ruled he didn't receive a fair trial, but in April, a judge allowed prosecutors to pursue a new trial. That retrial concluded last week, and the verdict?
Where the defendant is charged with the crime of murder, is he guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Now, at age 52, Durrell Jones is finally a free man. He joined us in the studio earlier today, and he says he's still taking it all in.
Standing at the post, you know, and waiting for that decision, it's just a flashback to what happened before. So that's the hump I'm trying to get over, that feeling. It's a chilling feeling when you're just risking your life, because I know the words natural life. And so just being back in that situation, it was a little chilling.
In this retrial, the jury took about 2 hours.
Yeah.
What was going through your head during those 2 hours? And as you had to stand and await a verdict again in this case, what was going through your mind? How did that feel? I imagine no one can imagine it if they haven't experienced it.
Yeah, it's, you know, my mind was just thinking the gamble, right? You know, I'm standing for my principle. I'm standing for what I know I didn't do. I'm standing for what I know is right. And I felt like that was the way to expose them. That's why I didn't take their deals, because I'm saying I have to go all the way for the next guy or the next woman that's in Framingham or wherever. I have to do it. But it's hard when you realize that behind you is your sister and, you know, and your girl and different people and, you know, family and friends and my dad. I'm thinking about them. You know, that's all I could think about was, did I just put them in the situation to be separated again from them because I have to go through this? But I think they understood. I just had to. I couldn't let it go. I thought about it in prison too long, you know, and new trial was the way to go. They did it to me in secret in the past, and people didn't know I was there. And I think that's one of the issues. No one knows that we're there until we end up in a situation of getting out. And it was important to me that it was public. I didn't think it was going to be like it was in Plymouth and all of that.
You mean as public as it
was?
No,
it wasn't that it was going to be as public, that they were going to be as nasty and as, you know, and spiteful and move it all the way from where it's been for 30-something years, 32 and more years. It's always been in Brockton. And the court proceedings, the appeal, everything, and then throw me out to Plymouth and try to put me in a situation where I can't pick juries of color. You know, if you look at the statistics, you'll realize that Brockton had the biggest pool of people to pull from, yet and still they weren't having a lot of people from Brockton at all. And they definitely wasn't having people of color. So, you know, I come from a mixed family, so I understand, you know, I don't have a cultural issue, but seeing what they were doing, I realized that that's how they were thinking.
Did you feel then that the system was being deliberately stacked against you a second time after clear evidence? I mean, your first trial was eventually thrown out because of, you know, police falsifying evidence and a detective lying and a weak case and a racially biased jury. So you felt like that deck was being stacked against you again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to trial when the original trial itself is a jury that came back two times, couldn't decide, you know, stuck there. Even with the racial bias that went on, even knowing that there were people there that said he's black, he did it anyway, even before they started, that whole scenario was tragic, you know, and watching the way that they carried it out, you know, all the avenues that they used and the denials from the judge to everything my lawyers were doing, that was a great job. I couldn't believe I was even back in court. You understand? I couldn't believe it because No one's ever identified me in this only identification case, and no one ever identified me. The police know I'm standing right there in front of these witnesses. Right when they open the bar and we step out. So I know they know what we know, and they know more. So they know it's not me.
You've said in the past that while it wasn't a death sentence, you were sent there to die. It was the equivalent of experiencing a death sentence. So what did you think about someday hoping to get out? Did you fantasize about things you would do when you were free again? Were there things that you hoped could be a part of your life in the future? What role did hope play during that time? And do you have plans for any of those things now?
Well, you know, you can have all the hope in the world, but you have to understand what that feeling is like. You know, whatever my hopes are or whatever, you know, can be gained back at this point, you also have to look at losses. And while I was away, my grandmother, who basically raised me, you know, my only brother, they died, you know.
I'm sorry. They died
a week apart. So both of them in the hospital at the same time. And then when you can't go to their funerals, I lose them, not there for them, can't hold them. And then in 2008, my son dies and I can't go to the funeral. So I'm not there for him. It, you know, I was caught into that. So there was no time to think about what I want to do. It was all traumatic time, you know, and then you're dealing with the prison system and, you know, the guards, and I'm trying to build programs in there. There was just so many difficulties. That's all I know, you know, rough terrains.
What kind of programs were you trying to build while you were in prison?
Well, I was fortunate enough. We did, you know, Beyond the Wall. And so I made the first video from that prison system to be able to outreach to kids along with other guys, you know, Mac Hudson and, you know, just Ricky McGee and just good people, right? Mark Thomas. And I was able to get other lifers, you know, Herbie, list of people. I would like to name them all, you know, and, you know, to be able to make this video to come out here to talk to kids. So we made the video. That was major for me. And, you know, I actually was able to make two albums from the prison, not through the prison, but through the phone, and What's Beautiful Never Dies and Obama Answer This, where groups of artists out here got on those albums. And actually, the I was talking about it because I didn't pay attention to it in prison. I know now, winning a United Nations award for the Obama Answer This. So I'm sitting in prison getting a United Nations award.
Incredible.
And it didn't even dawn on me that, because I wasn't in it for that. And then having, you know, the AAC programs and different programs. I was the chairman at Norfolk, you know, for the African Americans. And it was different things to be done in there. But hope-wise, I just believed in God. I just believed that it could not always be this way, that he wouldn't allow it to be that way.
You've been out fully free for 6 days.
For 6 days, yeah.
And what comes next? How do you think about this open time in front of you now?
Well, my commitment has to be priority to be with my son, you know, that's here, and be with my other son, and to enjoy the community, you know, enjoy my family, and you know, and enjoy the life that I'm having, you know, and the little man Doug in my life, you know, new people in my life, right? And, you know, and having, you know, a woman in your life and all these things to adjust to. But I have to first, along with that, focus on where I was and how many people I know, you know, too personally, that shouldn't be in jail. And I think it's important that I have to follow up on things that I envision, like Do Your Homework Media. I speak about that because WBUR played a major role in investigating my case, Bruce Gellerman, you know, and so did WGBH, Jennifer McKim. But there's so many medias that didn't follow up. And although I've been on those shows, you know, many shows, 5, 4, all those things, and I've, you know, been in all those papers for projects that I did in prison, I didn't really talk about what was happening to me because I wanted to do the projects. But I realized that the media...
So you felt like you couldn't bring your own case forward because you needed this focus to be on the projects.
Yeah, because that was important to me. And I didn't think they were interested, you know, in trying. So I was just doing the appeals until, like I said, Bruce Gellerman and we met and we, you know, we talked and he started following up and looking at what I was saying.
What would you say to the media outlets now that were interested in the programs you were running while you were in prison, but that you have said showed no interest about why you were there and whether you should be there? What's the message to journalists and media outlets about how and where they should be paying attention?
Well, I consider them to be aftermath specialists, meaning they come through our communities, right? If a shooting happened, and they will hunt a family down, they will knock on your door, they will bother you, and then they forget or they choose not to follow up. So I've learned now firsthand, even through this case, even on some of the major ones that I've been on, and I intend to put that out there, that I've been on, and they've run different things on me. And I've been on there more than once and twice and three times, right? Channel 4, all of them. And then I go through this process, and you don't appear, right? And you don't say anything. Hey, that guy that we had on here before, he's out. He's innocent. You know what I mean? This is what's happening. And I think, who would do that? And I'm thinking, if you're a media, you'd want the public to know who's back, what's going on, and as well as want them to know the issues that are happening in Massachusetts. I'm not the only one that got out. And just this, we got seven of us out in just a matter of 2 or 3 years and innocent, and they're out here now. And you're not even following up. So you, other states are doing it. If you watch the Central Park Five that's going on now, I got a chance to spend time with Corey and them, you know, in Atlanta. We just left in April. And now you see the way they see us, and you look at that and you say, these other states are following up. The media's following up. You see every day somebody getting out innocent. It's almost as if Massachusetts is keeping it a secret to say, hey, we have that problem too. We're locking up innocent men and women, but we're keeping it low. And what honest media would want to prevent the public from knowing about that? I have a problem with that. And I think to only show up when it benefits you and to only put out the issues when it benefits you is a abuse of our community.
The Central Park Five were five young men who were wrongly convicted of rape in New York a number of years ago. You met with them in Atlanta. Yeah. What was it like to meet those men?
Well, being in the same situation, they just happened to have that situation. I was 18, too, and they were a little younger, some of them. So meeting them was like, wow, same story. You know what I mean? And same malicious prosecutions. So it was wonderful meeting them and hanging out and exchanging, you know, a little bit of knowledge about each other. But it's even more wonderful to see the film that they have on Netflix, how they see us. And I recommend everybody watches that because
this is the
that
DuVernay
is happening.
Film.
Yes, that is happening here. So my thing is to expose what happened to them in order to get it over here.
You turned down two plea deals, one offered each time you went to trial.
Yeah.
The Central Park Five were arguably coerced into false confessions. It seems like in both of those circumstances, we're seeing a system that can easily channel people into guiltiness regardless of their innocence and into right. participating in the system in order to obtain relief or a shorter sentence or to get out of the situation. Does that really underscore holes in our criminal justice system? And what do you think we can do about that?
Well, one, it shows unaccountability. I understand it have to be police. I lived in a place where I met everybody from Aaron Hernandez on all the way back. So I've met the guys that come to prison, the worst of the worst, and the guys that did do it. And they say everybody says they didn't do it. That's not true. There are guys that'll just tell you they did it and they're just there forever and they don't care. So I respect that we have to have police because who was going to protect my family or little sisters or whoever? And good police should separate themselves from bad police. And I'm looking at it saying, okay, there's good police. Then you're accountable to say, I'm not that bad apple. Speak out. You know what I mean? And prosecutors, you have to say, I'm not that prosecutor. You don't represent us. You understand? And they're not. And the accountability from our leaders is to hold them accountable, to be able to watch for that, to be able to see how many bad cops have done this to people, who they are, how long they were in position to do it, and then you can start studying how they do it. But no one's doing that. No one's doing the homework.
Darrell, you're able to seek $1 million in compensation from Massachusetts for false imprisonment and potentially even more in federal court. Are you going to go after that or other forms of redress or accountability?
Of course. Of course. I mean, that's my recourse. And if it was up to me, I also plan to pursue the perjury on the officers involved and would like to see lawsuits against them as well because they caused the action.
You know, your wrongful conviction wasn't just a failure of criminal justice, but also a racially prejudiced society. What would you like to see change, both in terms of where we are on race in our country right now and where that intersects with the criminal justice system?
Well, the racism is a foolish act because there are white women, white guys, you know what I mean? There are just all cultures. The racism factors is something that we allow by not uniting, understanding that this is about poor people. This is about giving people jobs where they can control people's lives and they don't care the color. And it's identifying them, their racism. The cultural systematic racism is different than a people's racism.
You are a black man. When you went into prison 32 years ago as an 18-year-old, you went in as a young black man.
Correct.
You have come out in a different world 32 years later.
Without doubt.
You have come out as a black man.
Right.
Are you experiencing the world differently? Has it changed around you when it comes to race and your experience as a black man in our larger communities?
Well, sadly, you know, coming out here, what I realize is that the people out here are incarcerated. They just don't see the wall around them. They don't see the fence around them. They don't see that they're caught up in the prison system. Because the prison system kind of functions like this.
Disattachment, what do you mean by like this?
Disattachment, right? Judgments. A lot of hate for each other. You look at the Trump situation. You look at all of it. A lot of hate. That's what happens in there. That's the functioning world in there. To come out here and see people functioning the same way, and this many years later, it's a sad state to me because at least I know where I was. There's so many advancements that could be occurring in the world and unity, and it's like a setback. It's painful. It reminds me of prison.
There's a listener out there who's hearing a story from you today that they'd like to believe doesn't really happen, mm-hmm. that they'd like to believe couldn't be possible. Hopefully you've awakened compassion, empathy, outrage, awareness. What would be your last message of action to listeners who are moved by your story and what you experienced?
The Not In My Name movement is the example that I give. Things are happening in your name. When I went to prison, it was Commonwealth versus Darrell Jones. And when the DA gets up, what she talks about is, I'm Jessica McKinney and I represent the Commonwealth. So she represents you, your husband, your family, my family, and she's doing whatever she wants to do. And the public has to say, not in my name, because as I use the example, if someone was running around with a picture of you robbing stores or raping, whatever they were doing, and they always wore a T-shirt with your picture on it, you would call somebody, station or whatever, and be like, I don't know that person. So in this state, the district attorney can't convict because they want to. They have to do it in behalf of the Commonwealth. And I think it's a responsibility of the Commonwealth to start calling these DA's office and say, stop doing that in my name. I don't want that done in my name. And so that's important to me, to create that movement that they have accountability. The courtrooms are supposed to be public. I think we need to have court video cameras in the courtrooms and it be online where you
televised
can
televised courts.
Where people can watch cases because it's in your name. So you have the right to where people can watch cases and say, I see what's going on here. And until we're watching, it's never gonna change.
Darrell Jones is a free man after being found not guilty in a retrial of a murder for which he served 32 years in prison. Darrell, thank you for joining us here today on Radio Boston.
Thank you
Boston.
Very much for having me.
Darrell Jones will share more of his story at WBUR City Space on July 11th. There's more information at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering.